So, retrospectors, what historical events are we ticking off on this week's run of Today in History?
Well, Monday is the anniversary of the day Roger first published his famous thesaurus.
Then on Tuesday, we say happy birthday, Mr. Potato Head.
On Wednesday, the extraordinary stories of the child soldiers who fought in the American Civil War.
On Thursday, how King James changed the word of God.
And on Friday, what did spam emails look like in 1978?
We discuss this and more on Today in History with the retrospectors. 10 minutes every weekday, wherever you get your podcasts. Hello, man fans. Ollie Mann here with The Modern Man. This week's show, I'll be honest, it's a light-hearted one. We are a magazine show, after all. I've said it before, I'll say it again. It is a little burst of sunshine for you, and absolutely none the worse for that, by the way. My feature guest is Britain's premier warm-up man. He is the guy who whips up the crowd into a frenzy on Ant and Dec Saturday Night Takeaway and Celebrity Juice and Strictly Come Dancing, and he is very indiscreet. There are a lot of big celebrity name drops in this episode. Russell Brand gets mentioned, Frank Skinner. It's a riot, frankly. I enjoy it very, very much. I think you will too. This week's Foxhole is also rather fun. It is about manscaping. In the meantime, hello to everyone who got in touch to give Hal the Pedant from last week a taste of his own medicine by pointing out that August 1997, when Netflix was founded, was of course nearly 20 years ago, not nearly 10 years ago. I had actually failed to spot Hal's no doubt deliberate mistake when I read out his pedantic feedback at the opening of last week's show, but I was then grateful for the 50 or so emails that we've had about it. It is good to know you're out there, man fans. I guess a lot of listeners don't interact with podcasts until they know that they're right about something. It's always the same when I'm on broadcast radio as well, by the way. If I say by accident, you know, good morning, it's 10 o'clock, and actually it's 9 o'clock, the phones will light up in the radio studio, as on no other subject. I always say, if you want a guaranteed phone in, just ask the audience what year it is. But thank you anyway for everyone who wrote in to point out that error. In this week's show, you will learn why you need NADs in your bathroom cabinet. You'll also learn what it sounds like when Ollie Peart apparently unironically deploys the phrase go rompy romp romp. And you'll learn why you should never tell a joke in front of Bruce Forsyth. Let's go. On this week's Modern Man...
I don't try and hog the limelight. When you're doing your bit, I will disappear into the shadows.
Saucy jokes, ego management, and being thrown to the lions. The art of the TV warm-up.
It is fine to do whatever the heck you want with your pubic hair.
And Alex Fox grabs a listener's question by the short and curlies. But first, it's the man who's recently recovered from a speed awareness course. It's Ollie Peart with the Zeitgeist.
I got to sit in a helicopter.
What?
Well, it was at an air museum in Yeovil.
Speed awareness courses are obviously a lot more fun in the West Country.
It was great.
We are here to talk about the top trends of the week. Ollie, what have you got for us?
Body mists.
Okay, is this like the stuff Evian used to do, where you like spray water in your face?
I know what you're talking about. My other half's got one from Neil's Yard. You put it in the fridge, and then you spray it in your face, and
you
it cools you down.
You put it in the fridge, do you?
Well, you don't have to, but it's nice, because it's like spraying your face.
It is nice.
Yeah.
Okay. So but not that. That's been around for a while.
Yeah, that's been around for a while.
So what's
these,
body
right?
Mist, then?
Well, these were big in the 90s, but now, according to Amelia Perrin, they're going to be big again. They're like perfume, but the scents are much lighter. And they've got more alcohol in them, so they evaporate faster. Mm. Unlike perfume, where you kind of go, and it lasts all day. Mm. This is like... Or I smell a bit, I'm about to get on a train, give myself a little whoosh, get on, and you smell amazing.
Okay, I think what you're talking about is basically posh links. When you're a teenager, mainly because of advertising and because the limits of your pocket money, you go and buy yourself some links, right? That's mm-hmm. what you buy.
Yep.
Africa, Java. American listeners, we're talking about Axe. And then you get a bit older and you realise that actually all you need is an antiperspirant. Mm-hmm. Don't need to spend the money on the flavoured ones because they all smell like dirty socks in a locker room.
Yep.
Now, I'm at the age of 36 and I've never looked back. I'm still very much a sure for men sensitive kind of guy.
You demonstrated that last week at Wimbledon.
I think you're going to tell me that I should be spending more money on posh links.
Well, it's a middle ground between, you know, the really expensive perfume that you only ever buy at an airport.
Mm.
And the crappy links.
What does Ollie Peart wear, by the way, when you do go to an airport?
I wear Sauvage, which is Christian Dior.
I could have done. If I'd have just
had a moment to guess, I would have thought Johnny Depp, Ollie Pitt, obvious connection.
Well, and guess what?
Yeah.
There's a body mist version of that very scent.
I see. So this is actually all the labels, is it? Trying to kind of cash in and reclaim this category that they'd abandoned for a while.
Yeah, and you sort of, and you can, they're much cheaper. You chuck it in your bag and you spray it more often. And it's just a slightly more watery, lighter scented version of the smell you already like.
I see. So you can get Giorgio Armani and Ralph Lauren and Calvin Klein,
yeah,
body
Hermes
mist,
and oh, and Tom Ford's got one. Yeah.
So what should we be buying and how much will it cost us?
Depending on who you go for. Mm-hmm. So that Dior one that I told you about is, yeah, around, depending on where you get it from, it can be about $25 to
$40. $40 for a deodorant?
Well, it's not a deodorant. That's the point. It's not an antiperspirant.
No.
It's like,
so it doesn't deal with the sweat issue.
No, it doesn't
deal with my hairy back sweating at Wimbledon. So I need my antiperspirant and my body mist in my bag, is what you're saying.
Yeah. But if you were wafting into Wimbledon when you had one of these, people would have gone, ooh.
Delicately scented man walking past.
Essentially, they're cheaper than perfume. They're easy to carry around with you, and you just, you know, they're not. It's not like you're carrying a big glass thing about, is it?
What else have you got for us this week?
Love Island.
Oh, God. Everyone's talking about this.
Isn't it insane?
And I'm not watching it.
No.
So, but I have noticed that everyone's talking about it, so you're right, this is a legitimate trend.
I am the zeitgeist, so I have to talk about these things. So, it's a British reality dating show. The original series went out in 2005, mm-hmm, and lasted a year, went out until 2006.
And when it was called Celebrity Love Island.
It was Celebrity Love Island.
Very loose definition of all three words.
Yes. And that was based in Fiji, which sounds really nice. But the new series, or the new version of it, launched in 2015, and that's based in Mallorca. And basically, what happens is all these sexy people go to Mallorca.
And they are all exceptionally good-looking people from Essex, basically, aren't
it's
they?
It's like Greek statues walking about.
Yeah, yeah.
And they just hang about in this villa. They're being filmed 24/7. And the premise is they have to all couple up. So they have to find a couple, whether that's as a friendship or they actually really like them or they fancy them. It gets to the elimination bit. If you haven't got yourself into a couple, you get eliminated. You don't have to sleep with each other, but they do, often.
Yes.
Because what else do you do when you're trapped in a house in Mallorca and you're surrounded by lots of sexy people? I'm sorry, that is what you would do. You go, I'm sexy, I'm single, I'm in a house in Mallorca.
I'm being filmed.
But it's not like they've got
a big...
There's not a knob cam. You can put a duvet of yourself and go rompy romp romp.
So for those of us who frankly are not interested in this, give us a for idiots guide.
Here's some characters,
uh-huh,
so you can pretend that you know what you're talking about. You've got Marcel Somerville.
Great
Marcel
name.
He's 31-year-old and he is a former member of Blazing Squad.
I mean, I would qualify that as a celebrity under the old definition. So there's obviously a few celebs still in there.
Well, as far as I know, he's the only one that has a little bit of celebrity.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, he stands quite a good chance of winning because he's paired up with a girl called Gabby Allen, who's a fitness instructor from Liverpool, mm-hmm, 25.
And so, why do they have a chance of winning?
Because they're a couple and they seem to be getting on quite well.
Oh, I see. Some people have still not succeeded in coupling up at all.
They have, but they change frequently,
right,
because
yeah,
they're quite erratic. And then there's another girl called Camilla, apparently used to date Prince Harry.
I was going to say she must be the posh one.
She's definitely the posh
Harry
one.
Harry dated someone called Camilla? Really? That seems so unlikely.
Yeah, imagine him screaming that out.
Talk about repeating the sins of their father.
And then there's Jamie, who's an ex-Calvin Klein model. And I've seen an episode with him in it, and he is a very nice man. As in, he made his partner, I can't even remember her name, some breakfast...
Oh, I see.
Birthday breakfast.
You didn't mean well-endowed
no.
and honed.
No.
No, you mean
no.
generous and kind.
Yeah.
So the ones we like is Jamie, but the one who's going to win is the bloke from Blazing Squad.
That's it.
Do you have a third trend for us this week?
Luxury watch subscriptions.
Okay.
We've advertised a few of these on the show. We've got a beer one and we've had a food one, I think, probably.
We haven't done a food one. We've done the razors that come to your door.
And they exist everywhere. In fact, so the body mists one, there's a body mist service where they send you, as a subscription, a different body mist every month so you can smell different throughout the year.
What's new? I mean, we've had subscription services for a while.
So this is luxury watch subscriptions.
No, really?
Yeah. You know the men's magazines.
I do.
They completely depend on luxury watches.
They do, and I hate that. I mean, I have quite a nice watch that cost, I think it was about £400. Don't mug me for it.
Oh, my God.
And, you know, I saved up for that, and it was a special treat to buy it. Every watch that I've owned before that cost between £30 and £100. One day I might aspire to own a watch that costs £2,000 or £3,000, but it would be a lifetime investment. Whereas the men's magazines, they literally have articles called things like, here are the 15 luxury watches you need for summer. And like each of them cost between 10 and 15 grand. And I always read that and I think, well, you've just shat all over your own editorial, haven't you? Because no one buying this magazine can afford that.
So this company, 11 James, try to address that problem.
Yeah.
And you can subscribe on different levels, Ollie, and have access to luxury watches.
Okay, so how much is it for a Virtuoso?
A Virtuoso is $899 a month.
Yeah, see, silly, isn't it?
If you can spend $900 a month...
Then you can afford the...
You can afford the bloody watch!
Yeah.
We're talking about $10,000 a year.
But okay, but there are certain guys who would spend $10,000 a year so they could have a new watch every year. I mean, they're ridiculous, and they've got their priorities wrong in life, but they exist. And those people could instead, for that money, I guess, have a regular repertoire of designer watches. I mean, I have seen these things for women's handbags. You can get services where, for a certain fee every month, you get a Chanel handbag and then you return it and you get a Gucci one. So it sort of makes sense.
I suppose I can get it if they're really exclusive in that they're one of a kind. Mm. So, like, maybe you never see that bag or that watch anywhere else. That kind of makes sense.
Okay, the time has come. You can avoid it no more, Ollie. We are wrapping up this week, as ever, by finding out how you are proceeding in your quest to become a true trends insider.
Mm-hmm.
Have you become Twitter verified?
I've sent off another verification request last night, mm-hmm. because I passed the window where I could apply, mm-hmm. again. Haven't heard anything yet, so I will update you when I get some progress.
So you haven't been told no for a second?
No, but I got a contact at the PR for Twitter, and I'm hoping they can help me.
Okay. Have you held a Nando's black card?
Have a look at this.
Okay, I can verify, listeners, that I can see a picture of Ollie Peart holding a Nando's black card.
That's 2 years old, but it's still a Nando's black card.
Okay, so...
Tick that off the list.
Well done, Ollie. Have you become a Freemason?
This evening, right. I am meeting a Mason, yeah. in the Freemason's Arms near Covent Garden.
That's a pub, isn't it?
It's a pub.
Is that actually to do with Freemasons?
It was his suggestion.
Have you tried the latest skincare treatment or product?
No.
Why?
It's still in the pipeline, trying to just get that one... Don't worry. The ball is rolling.
Is that the latest skincare treatment?
No, but it sounds
being
like
rolled
it could
by
be,
a ball. Have you sat at a chef's table?
Not yet, but I have some news.
Go on.
I have found a chef of sorts. Her name is Hersha Patel, otherwise known as the Little Indian. And she cooks Indian food, and she has a YouTube channel that's highly successful. She's been on This Morning, and she's done some other TV spots.
Okay.
I got in touch with her. Friend of a friend, right?
Okay.
She has agreed to cook for me lunch in her house, provided I pay for the ingredients. But the one thing she did say, yeah. and I hope it counts, because I think it does.
Yeah.
She said, look, I'm not a qualified chef, and I don't want people to think I am a qualified chef, but she is a well-known cook, and I think that's okay. But here's the other thing.
Mm.
She's invited all of us round to her house where we can go and eat.
I think you've just sold it with that final line there.
You get free lunch.
All right, sold. I mean...
Yes!
No,
we're taking that off.
All right.
I'm having that.
Well, you haven't done it yet.
But it's booked in.
When we've done it,
31st.
We'll classify as sat at the chef's table.
Booked
all right.
in, 31st.
Have you joined an elite dating app?
Yes.
Have you acquired AAA access to a festival?
Yes. Thanks, John McClure.
Have you achieved tickets to the London transfer of Hamilton?
No.
Obviously not, and I bet you haven't even tried again.
No, but I'm...
Just fucking try.
Okay, all right.
Everyone's screaming at their phone. Just try. Have you taken a parliamentary ghost train?
No.
When's that happening? You said last week it was going to happen soon. Why haven't you been to High Wycombe?
Because the weather's too nice. I'm trying to get in touch with a guy called Jeff Marshall, right? This guy, he is Mr. Ghost Train. I want to uncover this world.
Yeah, you want to be able to explain it to us.
Yeah. So I'm going to try and get in touch with him. I'm going to try and make sure that I can get a train with him. If not, my vow to you is that I will get that train anyway.
All right. I guess that's good enough. Until next week, then, the man that has now held a Nando's black card, Ollie Peart.
Yes.
Thank you.
Goodbye.
Now, have you ever been to a TV recording? I've been to dozens, actually. As an only child living in an unremarkable North London suburb, there wasn't that much to do for free during my teenage summer holidays, but I did live near Boreham Wood,
which is where Top of the Pops was filmed. So I went to watch that. I also live not too far from TV Centre, where over the years I saw Clive Anderson, Parkinson, Little Britain, Grace and Favour, The Stand-Up Show, the list goes on. I did think I might want to work in broadcasting, so I was interested in how all the showbiz worked, how the camera crew were coordinated, how the talent interacted with the audience. But over time, the thing that I got to appreciate was the warm-up man. Never gets to be on screen, never gets any credit, but can provide the distinction between an entertaining evening and one that just drags on and on. Andy Collins is the best in the business. Ask anyone. He's warmed up audiences for Graham Norton, Jonathan Ross, Dame Edna, even the closing ceremony of the London Olympics. I went to meet him.
Why does the audience need to be warmed up? I mean, if I'm being very honest with you, there are a lot of shows where I go, what am I doing here? They don't need me. Of course, I'm keeping that well to myself. And I would strongly advise that anybody listening to the podcast wipes this from their memory banks. But there are some shows you go, they don't need me, but I'll turn up and do the job. And then sometimes they do need me, because my job is to whip them up into a frenzy, but also to guide them into where we want the show to go. If it's a game show, it's for them to cheer and support and encourage and to maybe shout out the answers. If it's a chat show, it's to react to when the A-lister says something hilariously funny and they react, or when the presenter's doing that opening monologue.
Do you watch shows and think they haven't been warmed up properly?
Oh, yeah. Did you watch the F1 in London where they had Little Mix on?
No.
Oh, OK, it was on Sky Sports 1. And they had the F1 cars going around Trafalgar Square or whatever. And Little Mix were doing a concert and there was only about 250 people in the audience. But no one had gone on before and said, right, Little Mix is coming out, so we're going to want you to clap along and we're going to want you to cheer and wave and do a bit of audience participation. They didn't do any of that. So when Little Mix came out, they cut away and Little Mix did this whole bit of, and now your turn. And literally cut away to the camera and there was a bloke walking away on his phone. You think, oh no, you did everything. You've got the fireworks, you've got the pyrotechnics, you've got the blue screens, but you haven't paid.
You haven't asked the audience.
You haven't asked the audience.
To get involved.
Easy as that, really.
So you do Ant and Dec Saturday Night Takeaway.
That job terrifies me than any other job in the world I do. Because I'll tell you the reason why. I'm terrified of letting them down. And I remember once, season 2, episode 4, the audience weren't brilliant. They were all right, but they weren't brilliant.
What was wrong?
I don't know. It just wasn't. I can't put my finger on it. It just wasn't happening.
I mean, that show, when you watch it casually, it looks like the audience are having the best night of their lives.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what you're aiming for.
But for that particular episode, it wasn't. And I remember Ant saying to me in the green room, audience weren't on it tonight, and that hurt so much that I swore then that would never happen again on that show. And so every time I do that show, it terrifies me because I don't want to let them down. But it's weird because I've done bigger shows in amount of people, but that one terrifies me. Celeb Juice, Keith Lemon, very, very intelligent man, because they could do that show in front of 700 people, but he knows. He likes it small, intimate, so we film it in the studio, which only holds 150. So there's a waiting time for the tickets for ages. It's the most requested I get for tickets. It's hard though, because it's pre-recorded, so even though it's on air for 42 minutes, it actually takes 3 hours to film. So yes, they're at level 10 early doors, but then your job is to keep them at level 10 2 hours and 45 minutes in, and that's when it becomes hard.
Okay, so let's talk about that when, frankly, the show isn't of a standard that everyone's really enjoying.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, you're doing some flawed daytime chat show.
Oh, I've done many. Oh, many, many, many.
The audience is a load of old dears busting from Blackpool. Yeah. They think they're going to enjoy it. 2.5 hours in, they're bored. But presumably it's part of your job to make sure they stay in their seats.
Yes.
How?
That is a tough one, because it has happened a few times. Well, I'd work on the show and they'd just go, this show is rubbish. I know it. The audience know it. That Dunkirk spirit of, we'll get through this together, folks. And
do you ever let the audience know that? Has it ever got so bad that you've thought you might as well, just with a glint in your eye, acknowledge this is a shit show?
I did a show once. I was with, it's a Magic FM DJ, and it was a quiz show, and I did this one show, and we only had about 12 people in the audience that sat 100, and it was taking ages to film. So we had a quiz. I went and got some cups of tea for them. I sent someone out to get some donuts. I know I've done the Alan Titchmarsh show where the audience has been full of ladies from the WI. We've had a great time and we've taken it a little bit saucy, and it's been an absolute scream.
Now that's difficult, right? Getting that level of a little bit saucy, right?
I used to do 2 warm-ups a day, sometimes 3, but I used to do the Titchmarsh show during the day, which was 200 WI. So that warm-up would be talk about the war, We'd play bingo.
We'd talk have, about the war.
We'd have a.
What do you mean? What did you say?
Remember the old days when, you know, rationing? And then we'd have a little. We'd do songs from the West End shows. And it was a gentle warm up, but it was a lovely warm up. I loved the gig. Then I'd jump on the taxi bike, scream over to the other side of London to do Celeb Juice, which is 200 18 to 30 year old kind of Ibiza. So literally, I'd go from underneath the arches, jump on the motorbike, leap off, be given the microphone because it was that time, walk out and go, right, you motherfuckers, let's hear you bounce. Now, the important thing was to make sure you never got those two jobs confused.
And can you sense when an audience doesn't like you?
Okay, a funny story. I supply warm-up men for shows because it's just too many. So I supply with a voice, X Factor, Big Brother. Now, Big Brother audience is tough because they're small and they're of, with the greatest respect in the world, they're a Jeremy Kyle audience. Okay, so they're ruthless, right? And I said to my warm-up men, you've got to go out there and you've got to own it. Boss it, because you're in the centre. It's like an amphitheatre. They're all over you. You are in control, right?
And of course, part of the reason they're there is to heckle people and laugh at them.
So you've got to be. I am here. I'm in. Boss, this is what's happening. Don't show weakness, because there's a lot of regulars at Big Brother. If they smell weakness, they will destroy you. And one of my warm-up men went out there, and he reeked of defeat, and they smelt it, and they destroyed him. They destroyed him. They just heckled him. But he phoned me up afterwards and went, I never want to do that gig again.
Okay, talk us through that then, how it works. Why sometimes you're summoned in front of the camera crew and everything to talk to the audience and sometimes you're not? Because if you've ever been to see a live recording, sometimes the warm-up guy comes back and sometimes they don't.
Okay, so I did Michael McIntyre, right? Now, let me just start off by saying, I think the bloke's very funny. I would pay money to go and watch him. I think he's hysterical. I get booked, right? I turn up. His first words to me are, I didn't want you. I got told I needed you. Okay, Michael. Evening. Hello. And listen, I'm just here to fluff, Michael. I'm just here to fluff. Don't, you know, I'm not here to... Because the worst people to work for are comedians, as a warm-up man. All comedians are neurotic, terrified that you're going to get a bigger laugh of them. Every single comic, not just Michael McIntyre, every comic. It's they're hard bloody work. They really are. Evening, Frank Skinner, if you're listening. So Michael says, I don't want you. So I said, but Mike, don't worry about that. So I go out, and the actual show is quite good, even though it never got commissioned. I do me 15 minutes at the beginning. They're a lovely audience. Michael McIntyre goes on, the show starts. And then there was a break. Now, normally when there's a break in filming, if something goes wrong as a technical setup, I would go on. That's what a warm-up man does. Something happens. I go, right, it'll be about 10 minutes. I go to go on. Michael grabs me by the arm and goes, don't worry, I've got this. I went, fill your boots, Michael. I'm still getting paid, son. So he went on. I went to the green room, had a cup of tea, never went back on again.
And did he manage to keep the audience warm, as it were? Or do you think he, even though he's a great comic, didn't have that? Let me
throw this another way to you. Did you remember watching the Diana concert? Did you see the bit with Ricky Gervais when he went on for 10 minutes, 15 minutes, and ran out of material and did the dance? Same thing. I was meant to go on, and I got the words of, don't worry, Ricky's got this. Fill your boots. I look back at that and go, that could have been me dying up there, but instead it was Ricky Gervais. God bless you and all who sail in you.
Because that's the difference, isn't it? What you're doing is you're not a comic and you have to ad lib around what's going on in the room. And if you're a comedian, even if you're quite accomplished at sort of improvising on the spot, you might not be that accomplished. And it's difficult to know how long you've got to fill.
Well, exactly. And also, I'm there to get laughs. I'm there to whip them up. But I understand the protocol of it. When you come on the stage, I step off the stage. I don't try and hog the limelight. When you're doing your bit, I will disappear into the shadows. I will only interact with you if you want me to interact with you. I've been around the game long enough to know that. I know the rules.
See, what strikes me is that the kind of material that you're doing is more closely linked to that ITV heartland, isn't it? It's got its roots in variety and panto and end of the pier stuff more than what a kind of slightly urbane comedian like even Michael McIntyre, who sees himself as a kind of man of the people but is resolutely upper middle class, they probably see your act and they think, oh, shit, he's connecting with this audience that actually this show that I'm doing for Saturday night won't.
Yes, you're right. But all comedians like that, Bruce Forsyth, Russell Brand, you name them, they're all the same. I've had issues with every single one of those comedians. Not issues in the sense of, you know, arguments, but just, you know, things like Russell Brand. When he left his dressing room, it took 45 seconds to get from his dressing room to the floor. My instructions were to be wrapping up, and I was to be off stage by the time he walked into the studio because he didn't want to be introduced. He just wanted to walk out and go. Now, that's no problem with that. It's just a quirky side of him, you know. And once again, it worked for the show. Bruce Forsyth, the legend that is, had the same thing when I did Strictly. When he was walking through his dressing room, I was to be wrapping up. I wasn't to do any gags for the last 10 minutes. All I could say to people were, hello, how are you? Because Bruce would walk on and then do gags. So now, that's hard because Shane Ritchie was in the audience and I had told him, I'm not allowed to do gags, not allowed to do gags discreetly. And literally, he was in the audience going, tell us a joke. No, I can't tell you a joke and you know that. But listen, if I ever got a prime time gig, I'd probably say a few things that I would want the warm-up man to do and not do.
What would you say?
I want you to get that crowd jumping. I don't want you to do Take My Mother-in-Law. Too many warm-up men, this is why I've only got a few in the stable, they go, well, I'm a comedian. No. You're not a comedian. Your job is to whip that crowd up. I've heard of warm-up men doing their thing, and the floor manager go, right, we're ready for you now. You can come off now. Talent's ready. And they go, oh, no, I've not finished telling the gag.
I haven't got to the punchline.
That's tough, pal. You are the bridesmaid. You're not the bride. So much so that there's a warm-up man I know who it always happens to him, but he's made it part of his act. He go, I'll tell you the punchline when I come back. And then he just keeps dragging it out. And then right at the end, he delivers a punchline. It's a shit joke, but he's built up.
Lasts for a whole 2 hours.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Frank Skinner, that was the name you dropped on the floor. Got to pick it up now next time.
Yeah. So Frank Skinner's doing his show. There's a warm-up man on. And the warm-up man is dying the most glorious death. Dying the most glorious death. Just happens. Just dying. The audience aren't getting him. Frank Skinner's in the gallery. And they go, right, Frank, obviously, he's not going very well. Shall we get you on? And his exact words were, oh, no. Let's leave you for another 10 more minutes. Now, if that's true, that's ban out of order and evil. And if it's not, I apologise. But comics are always hard because, like I said, they get very paranoid.
Does it work in reverse, though, as well? You say you represent warm-up artists. Do you actually have warm-up men who see themselves as a bigger star than some of the people they're warming up for?
Yes, and we have words. We have words because you have to decide what you are. Are you a warm-up man, or are you have you got ideas of being something else? And that's great to have ideas of something else, but you're being booked to be a warm-up man. I mean, the greatest bit of advice I could tell anybody getting into show business, be it warm-up, presenting, whatever. In the showbiz world, when people ask you, how are you? Be assured, they don't care. No one cares. So you go, I'm fine. How are you?
Because people like it to be all about them.
Yeah, it's a fickle business. Because I always remember Jeff Stevenson, who's a great warm-up. How are we doing for time?
We're doing good, yeah.
Jeff Stevenson, who's a warm-up. And I was in the bar with Jeff. And he said, get out of this business before you get bitter and twisted. And I went, behave yourself. I'll never get bitter and twisted. And then there was a point, I did the Paul O'Grady show when it was a tea time. And there was one time that Paul went ill, literally at the last minute when they were about half an hour to go, just chronically ill. And they were like, oh my God, what are we going to do? And someone said, well, Andy's here. He can do it. It's just, you know, he can do it. And their exact words, no, he can't do it. He's the warm-up man. So then they phoned Vernon Kay, who came from Chiswick, to come and do the show because I'm the warm-up man. And that's how it happens. You know, oh, he's just the warm-up man. That can hurt more than people booing. Yeah, you're just a warm-up man.
That's the reality, isn't it? Because people say, yes. Work your way into an environment, get your name through the door,
and then
they'll discover you.
Yes.
It's not true.
Not true. It is true, because Alan Carr was a warm-up man. Peter Kay was a warm-up man. But it wasn't their sole thing. They did other things. They did stand-up. Whereas I made it, I was doing a conscious decision of just being a warm-up man and doing very well out of it. But then you do come typecasting. And it's the old cliche. When the show works great, and it's brilliant, and it's everybody's buzzing in the green room after, oh, the show's great, beautifully written, oh, you presented that great, oh, it's marvellous, oh, it was shot beautifully, director. When the show bombs, warm-up was shit, wasn't it?
Andy Collins. If you would like to hear more from him, he does host The Breakfast Show for BBC Three Counties Radio. That's every weekday morning from 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. If you're in Hertfordshire, Bedfordshire or Buckinghamshire, but of course it's online as well. Or you can pretty much turn up to any big TV recording and you will find him there. Alex Fox is up next after this. Man fans, this show is free to download, but it is not free to produce. Look at our logo. We're not part of a big podcast network. Look at our website. We are not backed by a big newspaper or a commercial entity. We are proudly an independent production. We don't have offices. We don't have staff. We just have us making this show for you. So if you like what we do, please help pay for it. Support us by buying us a beer. The average price of a pint of beer in Britain is £3.47, a little over $4. By using the secure form on our website, modernman.co.uk, you can sign up to buy us one or two or three beers a month. Or you can make us a one-off donation via PayPal. Every penny helps support this show and bring you more episodes. Just click Beer Money. Cheers. It's time for the Foxhole. The delicious Ms. Fox is here. Alex, how are you?
Well, I'm not sure I'm that delicious this week. I wouldn't lick myself because I've spent the last 4 days in a field. I was in Cheshire, where I actually went to school, a festival called Blue Dot at Jodrell Bank Space Observatory.
Oh, blimey.
And, yeah, it's a celebration of science and space exploration and electronic music.
Okay, I'm guessing you still managed to find a sex angle.
Well, I spoke to a team of robotics specialists from Sheffield about what sex robots are available on the market right now, because there's been a lot of talk about them in the news. In fact, it will cost you about $12,000.
What will? Because there's been sex dolls, haven't there, since the 60s at least? Well, probably since prehistoric times, but I mean, blow up ones for at least 40 years. What's a new sex robot?
These have limited artificially intelligent capacities. I think people, when they hear the phrase sex robots, imagine something that's going to be incredibly lifelike and like a computerized human being that can have sexual intercourse with you and erotic kinky conversations and things like that. In fact, what sex robots can do at the moment is not what you see in the movies. It's very, very limited. So they can do things like blink and open their mouths and have a very restricted back and forth saucy conversation with you in the style of a Facebook Messenger chatbot. You know, they're not going to be able to predict your every whim and interact with you in a convincingly human manner at the moment. Although there are some people who would say that nobody wants sex robots to do that. In fact, part of the appeal of them is that they're not human, and the kink aspect is having sex with a robot, you know, having a cyborgasm.
Do you know the most exciting thing that happened to me last time I went to a festival, Alex?
What?
I tried a particularly spicy buffalo wing.
Okay.
It's time for our listener question, sponsored as ever by our friends at mycondom.com. Remind us of their excellent service.
Well, it's not me that has to remind you, in fact, because there are 1,259 independent users of mycondom.com who've left reviews on Trustpilot, and pretty much all of them have rated it 5 out of 5 and said that it's excellent. My favourite comment, well, I have a couple actually. One says, love the fact you use podcasts like The Modern Man to get your discount codes out there.
Way.
I love it too, Joe. And then another guy says, excellent service. I always use your stuff, mycondom.com. Just keep it up.
They can
help you to keep it up.
They can, yeah. They have products for everything. Okay, well, this week's question is from a gentleman who has chosen to remain anonymous. You can, if you wish. And he says, Alex, I watch porn every now and then to get me in the mood. And I've noticed that many of the actors in these movies don't have hair down there. I've been inspired a couple of times to give this a try, and it's kind of fun whilst I'm shaving my nether regions. However, I can't seem to be able to make things totally as smooth as a baby's bottom, and my wife tends to get irritation from my 5 o'clock shadow. I've never heard that phrase used in this context.
Please, can we call it 5 o'clock shadow?
So, Alex, what I want to know is there a method or product that will take care of this issue? I'm a little wary of taking very sharp instruments to my sensitive areas, and I'd prefer a spray-on wash-off alternative if available. Men's pubes.
Okay.
Let's do this.
We're talking manscaping.
Yeah.
Okay, first up, I really need to say it is fine to do whatever the heck you want with your pubic hair, but don't please feel pressured by what you see in pornography. There are many reasons why people in porn often are bare down there. One of them, with regards to men, is that sometimes getting rid of your pubes makes your schlong look longer.
That is the tip that I used to read in many a boys' magazine growing up.
Personally, I think completely shaven havens on a bloke can look a little bit giblet-esque.
Yeah, no, I don't see that many willies. My guess is that out there generally now, if you're talking about men from, say, their 20s to their 50s, there has been a trend, hasn't there, in the past 10 years for more shaving down there. I mean, when I was a teenager, it didn't get discussed at all. But I'm guessing sort of mid-length is usually the norm, isn't it? Take your bit off so you don't have 4-inch long hair, but not all of it.
Yeah, I think a lot of chaps kind of trim around their Slim Jim.
Yes.
Partly because I think men's grooming has become generally more acceptable these days. And also I do think that, again, I really don't want to prescribe anybody to do anything particular with their pubes. But yeah, a little bit of trimming can just make things a little bit more hospitable for a lady, particularly when it comes to giving oral sex. But I should point out that lots of women like the look and the smell even of pubic hair on a man because they retain a man's scent. And our writer here says that his wife gets irritation from his 5 o'clock shadow. I'm going to personally share here and say that not only can a lady's foof when you're bumping part to part during heart to heart to get irritated by a bit of stubble, but also I have suffered the embarrassing affliction of looking like Rudolph the day after an intimate encounter because I grazed my nose on somebody's pubic region.
Wow.
Yeah, it was really stingy.
So that's to do with it being freshly shaven.
It was it was prickly by the prick,
yeah.
And it scraped the skin off my nose.
Okay, there are beard trimmers, for example. Well, that's an electric thing with a guard, and that presumably wouldn't be as sharp.
Lots of people use electric trimmers to take care of things downstairs, and that is something I would advocate. You can get ones that you can use wet or dry as well, so you can trim then in the shower, wash all the pubes down the plug hole. But our writer does sound like he likes to remove a bit more, which can, you know, being really smooth down below is a sensation as well as an aesthetic look that some people really enjoy.
A sensation they enjoy during sex or a sensation they enjoy just walking down the street because presumably they feel a lot more of the breeze and that kind of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Or he even says he enjoys the sensation of the shave itself.
Yeah.
Lots of people like that. I know a lot of women as well who enjoy the ritual of shaping their pubic hair before a sexual encounter because it's almost part of their personal foreplay regime, if you will. It's like getting dressed up for the date. And you can get a very close shave if that's what you want and if you take care in how you do that. A few tips there would be, for a start, if your pubes are really, you know, if it looks like Kew Gardens down there, trim very gently with scissors before you use a beard trimmer or a razor. Then I would apply, some people use shave gel. I put this one out to friends and got many recommendations back. One lad said he finds hair conditioner really useful. If you apply a warm flannel as well beforehand, it helps open up the pores and soften the hair. Then use a fresh blade very, very carefully. Lots of people said that they really like beard oil or shaving oil to use on their pubes as well. Try to shave in the direction of hair growth first and then against the direction. And that should help you avoid this instant 5 o'clock shadow, as we've now christened it. Then use cold water or cold flannel afterwards to close the pores. And there are a variety of products on the market that you can then apply to do things like moisturise the area, or even some have got very mild acidic solution that helps prevent ingrowing hairs. But I'd do a patch test with those first. Don't slather your knob with a load of cream just in case you have some kind of allergic or burny reaction.
Okay, and to take his question directly, is there, as far as you're aware, a decent spray-on wash-off alternative?
There are tons of dream creams out there. There is actually one that you can buy called NADS. It's
not, okay.
It's not specifically designed for your NADS, but
really?
They do an intimate area.
Really?
There's loads of, like, you know, Veet and Nair and that stuff. A couple of warnings here. These creams can smell really sulfuric and disgusting.
Not like the delicious pube smell you were referring to earlier.
Yeah, they can smell pretty gross. Also, never, ever leave them on longer than the recommended time because you can get really quite a nasty chemical burn. One hot tip that our writer might want to consider is he could get his wife to shave him just before they have sex so he's lovely and smooth, and that can be part of their foreplay, particularly if you're into
I don't think I'd want anyone down there with a blade.
Yeah, it requires a lot of trust, but some people find that a really hot sub-dom kind of exercise. Please don't do that if anybody has had a drink.
Good advice. And if you do think you are going to have a shag tonight or later this week or any point in the next year, because, you know, they do have long date expiries, remember to head over to mycondom.com to get yourself whatever you need for the bedroom.
Plus, Plus, if you use the code FOXHOLE, you get 15% off. And don't forget that if you have a question of sex, you can head over to our website, modernmanwith2ns.co.uk, click on feedback and ask away.
And with that, we have very nearly reached the end of another show, but I do have time to anoint a new ambassador. It is Matt Thompson from Penge. Matt, your wife Hayley sent us £3.47 for a beer in your name. She says, Ollie, Penge is a modest area of South London with a silly name, but a lot of local pride. I am buying you a beer in the hope that Matt will buy me one for this. That seems a fair exchange, Hayley. I agree that Penge doesn't get the traction it deserves. And so, Matt Thompson, I now pronounce you Manbassador for Penge. Our theme is by art rock quartet Django Django, and now it's time to reveal our record of the week. It's by Flight. It's called Kathy Come Home, and it's off their debut album, out in August. Here it is. That is it for another week. I've been Ollie Mann, the producer Matt Hill, and we'll see you next Tuesday.
Maybe you're right. We're holding on too tight. It's hard to say. There's no right. Codependence.